This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. This week could well become a week that will be studied in history books for generations to come. Unless there's some sort of agreement between the two parties that seem to be so far, far apart, deep federal spending cuts will take effect this Friday. The odd name for these across-the-board spending cuts is sequestration. It means $85 billion in spending cuts to both domestic programs and defense spending. Detroit Free Press Washington reporter Todd Spangler tackled the task of explaining how the sequester came to be and what these impending budget cuts would mean for us in Michigan. He joins us now from D.C. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that wasn't a heroic effort on the front page of Sunday's Free Press trying to just sort out what the sequester will mean here in Michigan. Can you take us right back to the foundation? Because we hear President Obama, we hear congressional Republicans, each side pointing the finger of blame at the other. Isn't it more accurate to say the fingerprints of both sides are on this mess?
I don't think there's any way around the fact that the way this got started was a relatively routine idea of raising the debt ceiling back in the summer of 2011. And when Republicans on the Hill refused to go along with that, the agreement that was come up with in order to get it done was to put these cuts, these automatic cuts, into place starting in 2013. With the idea that they would be far too deep and far too draconian, that they would almost force both sides to come together with some sort of agreement. And as we know, they haven't.
And certainly after the rash of Sunday morning talk shows, it doesn't seem like there's any movement toward any kind of agreement, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think like past crises that we've had, the most likely thing that you would see is some sort of delay in it, some token spending reduction that would allow Congress to push this down a few months and try to solve some other things. But no, I don't think there's any big solution to this coming anytime soon.
So, Todd Spangler, taking an historic overview, give us a sense, how big a mess is this sequester, both politically and then really more so in real-life impact on real people with real lives?
I think from a political standpoint, it's really sort of hard to read the tea leaves on this. Clearly, President Obama has a much higher approval rating, is much more popular with the public right now than Congress is. There's no question about that. And there's been some polls that show that his suggestion of balancing some cuts with some increased revenues is more favorable to people than just the idea of putting these cuts into place. The real question ends up being whether or not people feel that taxes were increased enough through the deal that was reached here on New Year's Eve, as I recall.
The fiscal cliff?
And, right, when the fiscal cliff was solved and taxes were raised on people making, families making more than $450,000. A year. And to the Republicans on the House side, they said that that was it. They dealt with the revenue side. Now we were just going to be dealing with spending cuts. So both sides seem to be digging in to say, no, the Democrats and President Obama saying, no, we need more in tax revenue on the wealthy. And Republicans saying, no, we've done that already. You need to come around to our side on spending cuts. And it may take this to happen before people really realize which side of that they come down on.
So let's talk with what may happen, and let's start with defense cuts. And as you pointed out in your story in Sunday's Free Press, Michigan's not a particularly defense-heavy state. Yet a report released last night by the White House is saying some 10,000 defense jobs in Michigan could be impacted with cuts or furloughs. So what do you think this would feel like here in Michigan?
Well, I think that in particular areas where, I mean, like around Harrison Township and Macomb County, I think it could be felt rather strongly. I think there are other places around the Detroit Arsenal where there's a lot of people who work, civilian workers who work on tanks and other ground armaments for the Army, that are definitely going to feel a, you know, one day a week furlough. That's, you know, it would equate over that time period to about 20% pay cut. And I don't see that not having any effect at all. I mean, I do know some people say this is small, this won't really affect things, but you know, I think if you see 10,000 people, you know, out of work one day a week, you know, for the rest of the fiscal year, which goes through September 30th, you're going to feel it.
So if you're a worker at TACOM and you're thinking of spending money on a new car, you're probably not going to do that if you're looking at a 20% pay cut.
That's right. And I mean, of course, across the idea of sequestration, there are furloughs. I mean, I think the biggest impact that we're hearing out of the White House will be throughout the different agencies, the workers who need to be furloughed, whether it's for one day a week or one day a pay period, which would be a two-week period, and just what that does to the economy out. I mean, these are still jobs that, you know, the pay and people count on them to buy new cars, for instance, something that in turn could have an effect in Michigan.
Let's move from defense cuts to budget cuts and domestic programs. Todd, you've spelled out some ways the sequester will hit the most vulnerable in Michigan. So give us a sense of what these spending cuts would feel like in Michigan.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, for instance, when you're dealing with education funds, which do get directly affected by the sequester, you're looking at $20 million, you know, in Title I funds for education with children with disabilities being cut. White House says that could affect, you know, 240, 250 teachers and aides and staff who help kids with disabilities. With Head Start, you're looking at something along the lines of a $27 million cut in Michigan for Head Start funds, which could affect 2,300 kids who get those services, which are, you know, nutrition and some other things. There's a lot of things here that could affect a lot of different people.
And long-term unemployment, talk about that, because there are people relying on federal benefits to kind of bolster what they aren't able to get anymore from the state.
Right. Remember, there was, you know, once upon a time, there was during right after the recession, there was the 99 weeks that people received. That was partially state and partially federal.
Mm-hmm.
That's been scaled back everywhere. But in Michigan, which went from 26 weeks down to 20 weeks, there's still a federal program that extends that up to about 56 weeks that the feds pay for that would be cut by about, you know, 9% if this were to go into effect. We're not exactly sure how that will play out, but one way it's likely to play out is to cut those checks for about 77,000 people in Michigan getting that down by 9%, which would be, you know, you'd lose, you know, 9 cents on the mm-hmm. 9 cents on the dollar.
And quality of life issues come into play here too, because you spell out in your piece that we're going to see an impact at parks and airports, so air travel, border crossings, the Army Corps of Engineers with harbor dredging. So there's a lot deeper impact in the day-to-day life than one might think at first.
Absolutely. No, I you hear a lot of people say, a lot of people who are supportive of the idea of spending cuts say these are not going to have anywhere near that effect, and that this is fear-mongering, this is scare tactics
okay.
by the White House. But if you are going to have furloughs of key FAA personnel, if you're going to close down control towers, which they're talking about doing, if you're going to close parks for a certain amount of time, if you're going to furlough Customs and Border Patrol agents, that's going to have an actual effect. I mean, there may be fat in government, but there's not so much that you can reduce that kind of numbers and not feel it somewhere. Now, maybe that's worthwhile. Maybe some people who think that government needs to cut back are willing to put up with the inconveniences that would go along with that. But I don't think there's any question there will be inconveniences that go along with it.
Along with the hit to the economy that we were talking about, if you have people taking 20% pay cuts, for example, because
right.
of furloughs.
That's right.
Now, Todd, where do you find Michigan's congressional delegation stands in any negotiations to avoid the sequester?
Well, I mean, unsurprisingly, the Democratic members of the delegation, both senators, are very clearly in favor of some kind of deal to stop this that would include both spending cuts and some revenue increases, particularly like the president is calling for a limitation on exemptions that wealthier Americans could take, close some loopholes. It would bring some more tax revenue in, and that would be a way to forestall this. Many of the Republican members, I should be clear, there are some Republican members who think, like Justin Amash out in West Michigan, who really don't think the sequester goes far enough. I mean, he's someone who actually thinks that this is, even the sequester doesn't really make much of a dent in the budget, and there should be even more. You have others, and I'm thinking of, you know, Candace Miller and Harrison Township mm-hmm. and some others, who would say that this is a cut, this is a serious cut. Maybe it should be bigger, but there should be more surgically implemented. Really, we should be making a better decision about what should be cut and what not, and not taking this hatchet approach with it. But we shouldn't be looking at increased tax revenue. We've already done that with the increases that settled the fiscal cliff, and that we shouldn't come back to that the White House now needs to look seriously and specifically at spending cuts in lieu of these spending cuts. So that's what the dividing line is.
We're speaking with Detroit Free Press Washington correspondent Todd Spangler about his piece in Sunday's Free Press, really digging into the possible impact of the sequester in Michigan. And you kind of took us back to the genesis of the sequester, Todd, and your story gave us some history. And there are a couple of Michigan names that are a part of it, Republican Congressman Dave Camp of Midland and Fred Upton of St. Joseph. Explain to everyone how they're a part of all of this.
Well, back when the sequester was invented, when this came up as part of a way to raise the debt ceiling and keep the nation from not defaulting on its bills, The agreement was made that a super committee would be a so-called super committee would be created with six people, three Democrats, and six Democrats, six Republicans, and that what they would do would be try to get together, try to reach some sort of agreement that would be a kind of grand bargain.
Okay.
Maybe rewrite taxes, maybe agree on some spending cuts, figure out how they could move forward by, in a bipartisan manner. It never happened. And on that committee, Camp was on that committee, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the House. Upton is the chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House. And they're both in Republican leadership, so they were part of that committee. In the end, despite, I think, some efforts to try to reach some agreement, they just couldn't do it. They were just too far apart in terms of what revenue should be increased and what spending should be cut.
Speaking of being too far apart, let's talk about the view from the ground with voters watching this happen again. Everybody kind of went through the showdown over the fiscal cliff, and here we go again, another point where this gridlock between Congress and President Obama appears to be on the brink of really hurting the economy. And it sure isn't hard to guess why voters are angry and why congressional approval ratings are so dismal. What do you think all of this says about the state of governing right now in D.C.?
You know, I think it doesn't just say something about the state of governing. I think it says something about the state of the differences between the American people. I really do believe there is a very real argument going on out there between people both there and here about what the role of government should be, what the size of government should be, what it should be paying for, what it shouldn't be paying for, and what government going forward is going to look like.
And it makes you kind of ask a broader question. What does all of that say about the overall health of our nation?
Well, sure. I mean, there is that question about we're coming out of a very bad economic period.
Mm-hmm.
The recovery hasn't been nearly as good as people would have liked it to have been. Maybe if it had been better, you know, we wouldn't be having the same kind of argument. You know, excess of money, surpluses seem to make these problems go away pretty quickly. But, you know, for now, we are in that position, and it's only going to get worse in terms of Medicare spending and Medicaid spending and Social Security because, you know, we're an aging population. It's going to be more pressure on that system as they decide what the rest of government should look like.
And I think there's just a sense of wondering, will we ever get back to a time when people who disagree can come to agreement? Because I think we're at a point where we're all actually surprised when both parties agree on anything.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, is that what the Founding Fathers had in mind? We certainly didn't want a monarchy or didn't want a dictatorship. But you have to kind of look at this and wonder, can we get past this and come to a point where there's a sense of cooperation?
Right. Well, you know, when we talk about the Founding Fathers, I mean, there's no period in government that you can go to where there wasn't horse trading, where there wasn't
True. One
side wanting something that they weren't going to get, but willing to give up a little bit of that for something else. I mean, that, to a certain degree, the Bill of Rights exists because of horse trading on, you know, what was the states going to be able to accept in terms of a new government.
Sure.
This is more the same. Is it more pronounced partially because of social media, partially because of the divisions in Congress? Yeah, sure. But even when you go back a few years to, say, the Bush tax cuts, they wouldn't have passed if they had been forever. They had a timeline on them. They had a deadline on them. Things in Washington, for whatever reason, seem to be done in a slower kind of very hard to get passed way. And those things often involve delays, kicking cans down the road or putting deadlines on. And these are tough decisions, and I think that's going to continue for a while.
Detroit Free Press Washington reporter Todd Spangler, thanks for sharing your insights with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.